over in the fourth chapter of Mark, we find that the disciples of Jesus, they have a day that we might be able to associate with as far as just kind of the way that things transpire in life. We find that they have a wonderful opportunity to hear the Lord teach all day long. But not only do they get to hear Him teach, but they get private time with Him. They get explanation to things that He has taught that others do not get to hear. They get to ask questions, and we find have those questions answered. And it's been a spiritual feast. And we find that as they come to the end of that day of this wonderful spiritual feast, that we read this, beginning at verse 35. He says, "And on that day, when even was come, He said unto them, Let us go over to the other side. And leaving the multitude, they take Him with them, even as He was, in the boat. And other boats are with Him. And there arose a great storm of wind, and the waves beat into the boat, insomuch that the boat was now filling. And He Himself was in the stern asleep on the cushion. And they awake Him and say unto Him, Teacher, carest Thou not that we perish? And He awoke and rebuked the wind and said unto the sea, Peace be still. And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. And He said unto them, Why are you fearful? Have you not yet faith? And they feared exceedingly and said one to another, Who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey Him?" And we did a study of this passage a few years back, I recall, and in a lesson. And so there's a lot of wonderful things here. We just want to use it this morning to kind of set up the idea of our lesson about, you know, Christ's concern for our souls. Does He really have a concern? You know, is there evidence to it that you and I can look at today? Because we look at sometimes events like this, and we see that, yeah, you know, we have times wherein that we are just kind of on a spiritual high. Everything seems to be going so well for us, and the Lord is blessing us, and we are getting to partake in, you know, various spiritual blessings. And then the flesh comes crashing down. Then the world comes pressing upon us. Then life, you know, comes down upon us. I mean, it's one thing to be able to sit here at the feet of Jesus and hear, you know, the bread of heaven being poured forth, you know, before them, and partaking, you know, in this spiritual feast of these ideas from heaven's store, as Jesus, you know, teaches them. And then at the conclusion of that, Jesus, in a sense, says, "Well, we got to kind of get back to life, guys. We got to get back, you know, to what's out there in the world." And He says, "Let's go to the other side of the sea." Now, it's not told to us, and I don't know that the disciples did, but I would say that if I was in their position, I might kind of scratch my head a little bit, because here they are partaking in this wonderful spiritual feast, like we said, you know, where that they are among Israelites. They are among people, you know, that are like them and of a common faith and common belief. But now even more so, you know, they are among the Lord and among those that believe that the Lord is the Christ. He is the Messiah. And, you know, here they're in that. And Jesus saying, "Let's go to the other side." And they're going, "What?" That's kind of like going over to Sodom and Gomorrah. I mean, that's, those pagans live over there. You know, they got pigs. We're liable to come across some of those nasty old pigs. I don't know if you've had any experience with nasty pigs. Now, pig farming today is a whole lot different than it used to be. But I remember one of my little nieces and nephew, they wanted to go down and see the pigs down on my sister and brother-in-law's farm. And they didn't have a pig farm. They didn't really raise pigs. I mean, they had a few pigs that they used, you know, because wanted some bacon, some ham, and things like that. But they were crop and cattle farmers more than, you know, hog farmers. So, you know, they raised their hogs like you used to raise your hogs, you know, down there in the hog pen and in the hog mire. And so the little old kids, we all go down there. And I mean, they're not getting too close to it before they start going, "What's that smell, Uncle?" "Oh, that's just farm." Get down there a little closer and they're like, "Oh, that's terrible smell. What is that that they're waiting in? What are they stepping in out there?" Oh, and then they see, you know, pigs do some of the things that they do. Some things that are natural, but then, you know, pigs just walk right through it, you know. And they start going, and so you take a Jew, they don't ever get to see that kind of stuff, you see. And now they're going over here, they're going, "We're going over the other side." Those pagan Gentiles and not just their rituals and the thing, but I mean their whole lifestyle, the things that they do, the way that they talk, the way that they think, the way they dress. You know, I mean, they're going into the bowels of society in a sense. And Jesus said, "Let's go over there." And of course, if you read on in the fifth chapter, you know that they get their pig experience too. They do get to see some pigs. But the point is that life has changed. They're getting back to real life now. And even more so, they're getting a baptism of paganism, you might say. So as they go, and so they're going over. And Jesus is exhausted and he's asleep here in the stern of the ship, of the boat. And now a storm comes upon them. Now a lot of these guys, they are fishermen. They are out there on that lake. They know storms. They know the boat. You know, they know what it's, you know, like that can be out there. Some of them are. But it appears even those that are these great seamen, that they themselves are afraid. I mean, this is a scary moment. They are facing probably ocean-like waves that are splashing into the boat, you know, this water spraying in their face. The wind is blowing it, you know, as well as it splashes up over, you know, the bow of the boat, and they come in and it splashes in their face and the wind is blowing in their face and the boat is filling and it looks like that they might sink. And I mean, they have some things to be afraid of, to be terrified of, under probably all circumstances, as well as the one that, you know, they are facing. But we find that they still have this question: "Well, Master, you're asleep back here. You don't even seem to be concerned, but don't you care that we perish?" Now, they were talking about, of course, the idea of drowning. They were talking about the idea of dying in the body, in the flesh. And don't you care, you know, that we might drown? Don't you care that we might die? And the focus for our lesson this morning is actually to kind of help us with some of the problems that we might have with life, like they were having with life. And that is that here they've partaken in this wonderful spiritual feast that day, and yet now they have to face some things out in the world. And the worldly things become a challenge to the spiritual things. You see, they face storms, they face danger. A lot of people faced illnesses. There were people who had been blind from the birth up, and we go, "But Jesus healed them." But yeah, how many years did they go blind? There was a woman that Jesus said that Satan had bound for 12 years with her affliction. And Jesus used that idea. She's been bound by Satan with this affliction for 12 years. Well, what if Jesus hadn't ever come along? Well, it said she'd spent all her living on physicians, on money, you know, on doctors, and they couldn't take care. So if Jesus hadn't come along, she would have remained that way. We know that there were people that, like in Acts, a little later, once Jesus ascended into heaven, but nonetheless still working that power of healing that Jesus provided for the apostles there, a man that had been paralyzed for 46 years. That's a long time. And some go all the way through life and never get a healing. Some go all the way through life and never get a resolution to their problem. So, you know, we might struggle with illnesses. You know, we might struggle with physical pain. We might struggle with financial difficulties. We might struggle with relationship problems. We might, we have a lot of similar struggles. We have the times that we are caught out in the boat, and we might be kind of going, but Lord, don't you care, you know, that we're perishing down here on earth? Things are hard, things are harsh, and you know, how are we going to make it? Now, I'm not saying that the Lord doesn't care about these things. But as you notice here, as far as the title of our lesson, and that is His concern for our souls. And we see that the problems that we face in life, the problems that we face as far as physical, you know, challenges or, you know, emotional or relationship or, you know, those are still things that are fleshly. They're still things, you know, that are a part of this life. The Lord concerned about those because He doesn't like to see us hurt and suffer. But nonetheless, He does see us hurt and suffer. And He's seen people go through an entire life like this. And He's never healed that or removed that or taken it. Some people just have a tough, hard life, don't they? Some have it for a little while. But what the Lord cares about, and we might kind of go, yeah, but that's not what's really pressing on my mind right now. That's not really true. It's about our soul. He sees something even greater than what we see. Something that's pressing upon us even more than the physical afflictions or the things that come of the flesh that we might have to deal with. And His concern over those is about how they will affect us spiritually. So do you not care that we perish? Well, what if they had drowned that night? Well, we go, well, they'd been saved. Well, maybe. Good chance of it. You know, our estimation was they're faithful disciples of the Lord, right? But Judas is on board, isn't he? Yeah, so we at least know, you know, well, you know, one, you know, or not quite as certain of, but all of them. What if they had not ever made it to, you know, the other side? What if they had died? You know, what would have been, you know, the condition of their eternity? And so we find, of course, that that's what Jesus has come for. And Jesus realizes, I think that even like this storm, and I told you back when I taught, you know, on this particular piece some time ago, that there's a good indication that this is actually a supernatural storm. That this is something that Satan has brought up of the way that Jesus addresses it. Because He addresses this storm the same way that He addresses the demons that He confronts. When He tells them to be silent, to shut up, and to be still, and to come out of, you know, the person that He was casting. He says the same thing about the storm, doesn't He? And it does. It just silences right down. And then, right after that, they land on the shore over here, you know, in this strange place full of these pagan Gentiles. And what happens? Here comes this screaming, hollering guy chasing down after the hillside after them, right? Until Jesus puts His hand out and He drops down. But He's possessed with the demon as well, isn't He? You see? So, the challenges that we face are challenges that Satan puts there to try to do what? To try to get our focus off of the soul. Because we can live and die and life not necessarily be just what we want it to be, but the soul can be what we want it to be. And so we want to look at some indications that Jesus does have a concern for our soul, as demonstrated by such as His presence among mankind to begin with, His life. We find that it is God, John tells us in John chapter 1, verses 1 through 4, that has taken on flesh and has become a man. And it is that He took on flesh and He lived among men as a man. We see that as the writer in Philippians says, that he left, you know, the glories of heaven in order to be with us. Notice in the fifth verse, he says, have this mind in the second chapter of Philippians. Have this mind in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who in existing in the form of God counted not the being on an equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself, taking the form of a servant and being made in the likeness of men. And so, why did he do that? Why did he empty himself and take on the form of a man when he had the glories of heaven? Over in 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and 9, Paul says that he was rich. He had wealth beyond imagination. And he said, and he became poor for our sakes. So why would Jesus do that? Because he's concerned with our soul. He's concerned with that which might be bruised and battered through, you know, the elements of this life, but will not die. That will, you know, continue through eternity. So we see that even the workings of the powers and the miracles that Jesus did, that they were a demonstration that this is God. Who is this that is doing these things? Remember the disciples here at the end of this. They said, who is this that even the sea and the winds obey His voice? So these miracles, these releases, these healings are most certainly moved out of compassion. The Scriptures talk about because He had compassion upon them. But Jesus also said, you know, like in the days of Elijah, He said there were many widows who were starving. Life goes on. Life gets hard. Life gets difficult. But are we going to let it affect our soul? It can be, like I say, anything from things that are physical to things that are emotional to things that are relational, even things that are financial. And a lot of times, if we're not careful, we can allow Satan to use these to interrupt our concern for our soul, because Jesus has demonstrated His concern by just coming here. He says, I came to save your soul. I healed some people. I did some good things for them to demonstrate that it is Me, God, that is among you. But as He said on the even the night, you know, the night of His betrayal, but the week of His last week upon earth, He said, you will have the poor among you always. So there will always be challenges in life. And those can cause us to go, well, does Jesus care? Is He concerned? Well, He came. He left heaven. He left the glories of heaven in order to make things and to help us with things to be right. Continuing on there in Philippians chapter 2, we look at this when he talks about, you know, how that he existed in the form of God, but emptied himself and became a man, came in fashion as a man. He goes on there in the 8th verse, and he says, and he humbled himself, becoming obedient even unto death, yea, the death of the cross. So he's saying, I, God came and I took on flesh and I lived among you. I gave up the glories of heaven. But not only that, he died. He gave up his life, he says. He was willing to give his life for us. So, does Jesus care? Is he concerned? Well, my father used to ask the question, when you'd think about a death upon the cross that Jesus suffered, would you do that for your own soul? Would you go to the cross in order to save your own soul? Forget anybody else's and everyone else's, but just to make sure that you were saved. Can you imagine if that's what we had to do in order to save our soul, in order to live with God eternally, was ourselves to die upon that cross? You know, would we go there? So the challenge that we have in life are not things that are telling us that God doesn't care about these things and that God is only concerned about ourselves. He's concerned about these things, but primarily, as we said, because of the effect that they might have upon our trust, our faith, our confidence in Him to deliver us in order, you know, for our soul to be saved. And so to help us to see, yes, I am concerned, but I am concerned with your soul, Jesus said, I came and I gave up all things. I lived among you and I died. Something that we may not even do ourselves and for ourselves. We find that His resurrection shows us in Romans chapter 4 and verse 25 that He was raised, you know, for our justification. We find that this is necessary for our salvation. The Roman writer tells us in the 10th chapter of Romans in the 9th verse, you know, that if we believe not only that Jesus is the Christ, but he says there that he was raised from the dead. He says there, because if thou shalt confess with thy mouth Jesus as Lord and shalt believe in thy heart that God raised him from the dead, thou shalt be saved. And so, his conquering death, his beating death, he's saying, I'm showing you that it's possible. I'm showing you that I care for you by coming and living and dying, but I've raised to show you that it is possible for me to give you life. I'm showing you that your soul, that there is something that extends beyond even this life. And that is, of course, our soul. We notice then that not only does He care about us because of all those things that He has done, but now we have set those up and we see that here's what He's done. Here's what He's saying that He is presently doing. Here's what He presently does for us. And that is, He gives us intercession. Over in the 7th chapter of Hebrews, and in the 25th verse, the Hebrew writer says, wherefore also He is able to save to the uttermost them that draw near unto God through Him, seeing He ever lives to make intercession for them. That's such a powerful thought that the writer, that God uses here, you know, these picture-forming words, you know, these word pictures to help us to, you know, to really feel the impact and to see the greatness. He says He's able to save us. Yeah, okay. You know, we've seen past. But notice there how He says He's able to save us to the uttermost. In other words, He's able to take us all the way to the end. And that's what He is seeking to do, way beyond. The disciples that night, do you not care that we perish out here on the sea? Well, yes, because maybe tonight if you were to perish, you wouldn't be saved. So maybe the Lord has extended their life just so they can be saved. I think there's more to it than that. I think it's demonstration once again, just as they saw. You know, who is this? Even the wind and the sea obey His voice. The psalmist speaks of that only God, that the waves and the seas hear the voice of God. And if the psalmist said that and the waves and the seas obeyed the voice of Jesus, then who is Jesus that's in the boat with them? You see, it is God with them. But here He says, I want you to understand that I do care. I know what you're enduring. And there may be things that are shortened in our life. There may be things that are lessened in our life. Because like over in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and 13, you know, He tells us that there is no temptation that has taken us but such as is common to man. And also such but what you might be able to withstand. That you might be able to bear up to. Yes, there are a lot of challenges. I've seen people and I've tried to help people and work with people that are totally devastated in a relationship and because of what happens in a marriage. And it's tough. It's hard. I mean, it's every bit as tough they are, as every bit as devastated as someone that also comes and says, you know, I've just received a diagnosis that I have something that's terminal. The doctors do not expect, you know, me to survive, to live through. There are things that are devastating in our life, but I know that the Lord has promised. He said, but there's nothing that is greater than what you can bear. And to aid us in our bearing, we see then he says, in order to be able to bring you to the uttermost, in order to save you for eternity, he says that you can draw near unto God through him. Why? Because he ever lives. He continues. He's still the same living Jesus that was living that night upon that sea. And he says he's still the same one who makes intercession for them. On the night in which Peter betrayed Jesus, earlier in that night, on the night that Peter denied Jesus three times, earlier in that night, Jesus said, Peter, he says, Satan has requested to take you and sift you like wheat. That was Satan's request. Now, Jesus doesn't say that I prayed for you so that you wouldn't. In fact, he is. I mean, the trial that Peter went through that night was apparently just as great as the trial that he faced upon the Sea of Galilee that night as they're going over to the pagan land of the Decapolis. Because that night, he denied the Lord three times, didn't he? But the Lord did say, he said, but Peter, he said, I interceded on your behalf that your faith would not fail. That your faith would not fail. The description of what Peter went through that night, I don't think that I fully appreciate. You know, well, so what, Peter? So you're among a few people, and they're going, yeah, you're one of them. You're going, no, I'm not, you know. And couldn't you just stand up for Jesus? That I don't know that I can fully appreciate how great that was, because Jesus describes it as him being sifted like wheat. I don't know what it feels like to be sifted like wheat, but I know what it looks like, you know, back when they'd take the old sifts and they would throw the wheat up and down. And I don't even know what that feels like, but I do know what it feels like to be on a 20-foot flatbed truck that's got hay debris and dust and straw all over it. And the driver gets going a little too fast and starts hitting washboards on the road. And that truck starts bouncing, and you're just bouncing all over that bed. And you're going off of the bed. You cannot stay on. And all the other hay haulers with you, we're all, stop, stop, stop. Why? Because we're being sifted like wheat, just bouncing all over that thing and sliding right off. I mean, you're going to go off out of here onto the gravel road at about 40 miles an hour, and it's going to hurt. You know, that's what I think of when I think of sifting like wheat. So I think I've been sifted like wheat a little bit, you know. And luckily got the guy to stop, you know. So didn't really get to. But that's the way the Lord described what Satan wanted to do with him. And the Lord didn't say, now I prayed for you that you would not go through that. But he did say, I prayed for you that your faith would not fail. You see, that's Christ's concern for our souls. That's what we're seeing here. Over in the second chapter of Hebrews, and in the 17th verse beginning, he says, wherefore it behooved him in all things to be made like unto his brethren, that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in these things pertaining to God, to make propitiation for the sins of the people, for in that he himself hath suffered being tempted. He is able to succor them that are tempted. You see, the Lord himself felt heartache, felt pain, felt anguish, felt betrayal, felt sorrow, felt all the things that we feel in life. No wonder he doesn't just remove it from us, because he came, as we have seen, to live and to die and to be and to face what we are and what we face. So we see here then, because that he's able to come to the rescue, is the idea of that succor there. It's help is one way of translating it, but that's not powerful enough. It means someone has cried out and you are beating the path to help them. That's the full etymology of that word. Someone's calling, help, help, and you hear the cries and you're running with all your might to go so that you can help them. See, it's more than just, hey, yeah, I'll help you. You know, need to move? Sure. You know, no, we're crying out with help. Fourth chapter. And in the 14th verse beginning, he says, having then a great high priest who hath passed through the heavens, Jesus the Son of God, let us hold fast our confession. For we have not a high priest that cannot be touched with the feelings of our infirmities, but one that hath in all points been tempted like as we are, yet without sin. Let us therefore draw near with boldness unto the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and may find grace to help us in the time of need. In the 9th chapter, the 24th verse, we see again how that he keeps reminding us here, the Hebrew writer, of this priesthood of Jesus and how he's there to make intercession for us. And he says, for Christ entered not into a holy place made with hands, like in pattern to the true, but into heaven itself, now to appear before the face of God for us. Now to appear before the face of God for us. Does he care? Yes, he cares. Does he know what we're enduring, what we're going? Yes. Does he hear? Yes. Well, then, why do we have to face him at all? He says, I mean, and that's a whole other lesson, but the short answer is it actually helps us. It actually does something for us. It actually helps our soul. Without those, we would not be concerned with our souls. We would not wonder if, you know, we had a soul that even to be saved. You know, there's so much more to that than what we have to, you know, time to be able to give some answer to this morning. But the point isn't that, you know, are there some benefits or are there some reasons for it? But the point is that whatever it is that we're facing, that the Lord knows and He understands. And He's concerned. He's concerned. Why? Well, He doesn't like to see us suffer. He doesn't like to see us hurt. But mainly, He doesn't want us to see us our faith to fail. He doesn't want to see us give up on our hope. He doesn't want us to give up on Him. He wants us to know, yes, I do care that you perish. You're afraid of drowning, men. He said, I came to save your soul. So, let's look at this real quick. Well, then, you know, why? Why is the soul, you know, such a great concern for us? Because we find that the soul has a need just like the flesh has a need, just like the emotions have a need, just like our worries and our concerns in life. That we have needs that we want, you know, to come and to rescue us from, you know, things that fail in this material world. But we also have a soul that is starving. We have a soul that is equipped to be, you know, God's very own possession. We have a soul that is really a reflection of that image that God created us in, of His own. It is that reflection as He is, that He is Spirit. And we have that as well in us, that is Spirit. And that Spirit needs help. And so Jesus came that He might help that soul, our spirit. Because there is a danger to our soul. There is a peril, just as the peril to the flesh, just as the peril of suffocating in the Sea of Galilee, just as the peril of dying out there in those waters that night. The soul also has a peril. It too can be lost. The terrible thing about it is that it is not something that is just lost for a moment. It's not something that's just extinguished and then there's no more care. It's not like, you know, the soul and the spirit of an animal that goes into the ground and that's it as far as life that exists for them. It's not that we just die and it's all over and you know, we don't feel anything, we don't know anything, we don't even have any idea that anything ever existed, because there's nothing more to us than just, you know, this biological body and these electrons and things that are in us that have now, you know, died. died, ceased, they're no longer, you know, moving in us. And so now everything's extinguished and we just go into some kind of darkness that, you know, that so many think of life as being today. I'm here struggling with, I can't remember now what the philosophy is called, but, you know, it's just that, you know, you live life and of course you die and then everything's just all over. There's not, no. There's a danger to the soul because the soul isn't something that just dies and ceases to exist. That reveals to us that the soul has value. That it has value. It has enough value to Christ that we have seen what He did in order to show His concern for the soul, in order that He might save the soul. And then we find, as we were talking about, even though the soul does not die in the sense that we think of dying, that it just ceases to be, there is a destiny of the soul. The soul is eternal, and there is a place in which it can spend eternity with God and all the richness and the blessings that come from being in the presence of God, or it is the removal from the very presence of God's dwelling where God is, and a removal into that which we find that Jesus even describes as being hell. A place far removed from God. And so there is an extension of the soul that continues on, but one is like life and it's described like life because it continues to live, and the other is described like death, not because that it ceases to be, but because it ceases to be in the presence of God in any fashion or any form. And so is Christ concerned? Certainly. Why is He concerned? Because your soul, my soul, has a need. Because there are dangers to our soul. There are perils. Because our soul is valuable to God. Because someday our soul is going to find an eternal abiding place. One in the presence of God, one removed from God. So hopefully that's helped us answer any question that you might have. Is Jesus really concerned? If He was, then why this, why that? You know, a lot of people, that's just like the storm. And if it wasn't the storm that was created by Satan, then it's like the demon-possessed man that came charging down off the mountain. That's just Satan challenging us, facing us, trying to get us to doubt, trying to get your soul to be where his eternal destiny is, to remain there. But Jesus came so that it wouldn't be. If you're subject to the invitation of Jesus Christ anyway this morning, so that you would not have to be concerned with your soul in that fashion, trusting that the Lord has been concerned enough that He has done what needs to be done in order to take care of that eternal destiny of your soul, then we would encourage you to use this opportunity. If you're not sure about all of this and you have some questions, let's sit down. Let's open the Word of God. Let's look into it and see what the promises and the will of God is. But either way, we invite you, if now be the occasion and the time, we encourage you to come as we stand and we sing.